Hey, what's your problem? You have business problems? We have business solutions. Well, maybe.
Maybe.
Life is a fight.
It is.
In business, every day is a fight.
So real.
So, hey, what's your problem?
Yes, thank you, John David Wells from the Wells Report. Check him out. He's out of the Big D in Texas. Does his own radio show down there, and he is all about doing the political talk in the big state of Texas. Check him out, wellsreport.com. This is from the Big Dot HQ in Spring Hill, Tennessee. Check us out for anything lighting, electrical, and now heating and air. BigDotInc.com. This is the What's Your Problem podcast. Coming to you live from this building where we actually are streaming live on Facebook. I'm going to start doing that now that we have hardwired internet. Because we're out in the boondocks. We're actually getting into the 20th century at this point. This is a video and audio podcast. Check us out at whatsyourproblempodcast.com and follow along. If you have any questions or know anybody that would like to be a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest, let's talk. If you got some problems. We discuss all things Middle Tennessee business owner and professional regarding that one thing that keeps you up at night. What's the always something component that's keeping you up? There's always going to be something. Sounds like fun, right? I am your host, Jim McCarthy, with JimMcCarthyVoiceOvers.com. And today, all the way from Brentwood, Tennessee, Mr. Tom Law. Sir, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
We've got, we're another fellow B&I-er. Mm-hmm. Known you for a couple of years now. You're heading up health markets up there for Middle Tennessee, right?
Yes, sir.
Nice. So kind of giving people a little bit better alternative when it comes to health insurance, I would imagine.
Yeah, right? We hope so. You know. Yeah. There's some good stuff out there, and then sometimes you're just the tallest midget. Right. But we have to kind of look at it and say.
Sometimes it just works out that way. Uh-huh. Right? So before we get underway, I'm not sure if you're familiar. I probably should have told you before we got live. We do something called the
It's never Random good live, by the way. You realize that, don't you?
Oh, it's always good live.
I should have told you this before we started.
This is it's like going without a net.
Okay. No, we do something the first time.
We do something called the Random Five. Five random questions that are brought to you by Kalioka Company. Check those guys out. Link is in the description. Tom, if you had a way to clean things up with a probiotic-based cleaner that makes things smell so much better, would you be interested?
Depends on what the smell is.
Yeah. Well, like cat urine, garbage.
No.
You like it? You'd want to leave it?
There. I've always said if they made a woman's perfume that smelled like barbecue or bacon, I'd follow her everywhere.
You ever see the products called Mandels?
What is that?
Actually men scented candles.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to ask.
It's like gym shorts.
That's nice.
You know,
uh-huh.
Campfire, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Sweat socks. Ooh. All right, question number one. We'll get into it. And these are completely random. Is it better to live where there are four seasons or where one season takes up most of the year?
No, I like the four.
You like the four seasons?
That's one of the things I love about here. We were in Texas most of my life, and parts of Texas you get four seasons. Parts of it, it's Christmas Eve, and I'm playing golf because it's 85 degrees.
Yeah,
that's it. And so when it got cold, you know, when you had those 3 days of winter that hit while I was in Dallas, you ran home and changed your sweater twice a day so you could wear them all one time before the season was over. You know what I mean?
That kind of thing. That was, similar to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, question number two. When people come to you for help, what do they usually want help with?
It's a loaded question. But, you know, from the business side, it's I don't understand my insurance. From the family side, it's could be a number of things. You know, as far as what they want help with. But for the most part, it's financial questions. It's stuff along the lines that I specialize in.
Nice. What I'm saying. Question number three: what takes up too much of your time?
You got to be careful how I answer this. You know, as far as takes up too much. Who knows? Probably my smartphone.
Smartphone, yeah. Yep. I'd say that's probably a lot of the situation for things today. I think this is question number four. What would be your first question after waking up from being cryogenically frozen for 100 years? Mine would be, where's the bathroom?
That would probably be one of them. The next one would be, you know, can we get something to eat?
Yeah. Do they still make cheeseburgers?
Uh-huh.
What are some small things? Question number five. What are some small things that make your day better? That's a good question. I like that question.
Small things. I call it getting wins. You know, cool conversation on the phone with somebody, or hearing something new on the radio, or one of the guys on my team, you know, has a good day, gets a first down, so to speak.
Nice.
You know, that kind of thing. So,
advancing,
you know,
the ball down
just
the field.
Just seeing, you'll get a touchdown every once in a while, but if we just get first downs, they'll get to there. You know,
right.
Just knowing that. So I spend so much of my time training people and helping folks learn the business that I've been taught. And so when you see them having success, that's fun.
Right.
You know.
Nice. Well, there you go. There's the Random Five brought to you by Culioka Company. And we're going to come back in just a bit and get into it with all things Mr. Tom Law. Be right back.
Henry Ford once said that if you need a machine and don't buy it, then you will ultimately find that you have paid for it and don't have it. Nothing could be truer about energy-efficient LED lighting in your business. At Big Dot Lighting, we can show you how a portion of your savings from a commercial LED lighting upgrade will be paid for in hardly any time at all. Until then, you're paying for them anyway. Book a no-cost lighting energy assessment with Big Dot Lighting. At least 30% of your utility bill is waiting to be saved. Go to BigDotLighting.com.
And here we go with Mr. Tom Law. Sir, thank you for coming down all the way to the compound here. How do you like it so far?
If I was getting chased by the cops, this is where I would have come. It's kind of hard to find, but once you get here, it's good.
You don't know if we do electrical work out of here, if we butcher people.
I wasn't going to ask. Luckily, your office was right by the front door, so I just kind of ran in here.
You walk in, you cross your fingers, or you're not going to be hacked to death. Yeah. But it's one of those types of buildings that is kind of nondescript. We do have, you know, our lights on it and our signs.
It's good.
You know what we do. Getting into it before, the small things, the wins, that was very interesting because you described what I talk about in selling as the next mini commitments, the first downs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that kind of the like what you're talking about when you talk with a customer? Okay, what are we doing next? What's the, how are we advancing this down the field?
Yeah, because so much of what we do is Q&A. Mm-hmm. You know, we have access to so many different products as a company that my job is to beat you up with questions, you know, and then figure out what you need and help figure it out. Because as I tell my clients, we're not trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. We don't have to. We have access to so many different directions to go with it. So in doing so, we are just trying to identify what are the real needs,
right?
You know, and so no two people that we help are alike, you know, and so everyone has a different, we're not trying to say this is your only option. We're going to try to fit this into what they need.
So, I mean, when you have a lot of what happened in the last 10, 15 years with health insurance, I mean, your life, was it kind of turned upside down?
If you don't like change, this isn't the career for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you that. Yeah, I stumbled in here. I was on COBRA paying $1,400 a month for my family when I moved here. And I walked in this guy's office to buy a policy, and he hired me. You know,
oh, wow.
I jokingly tell people, if you'd told me this is what I was going to be doing a decade ago, I'd have taken you back behind the fence and beat you up. You know, don't you ever call me an insurance guy.
Right.
There's nowhere on my radar. Knowing what I know now, I wish I'd started when I was 25.
Really?
You know, I just took a liking to it. I really did. It's just because we get to help people every day.
Right.
You know, I mean, I jokingly say this job would be easy if I didn't have to deal with people. But at the flip side of that is, The government, whatever you want to call it, whatever, has taken a product that was pretty simple and made it very confusing.
Right.
And so from that standpoint, if you don't like change, I mean, every 6 months, what I'm sitting with people and showing them right now doesn't look anything like what I had a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it just continually turns over. So we're having to stay on top of it, which is, you know, job security at its finest, you know.
Right.
I mean, I may not make anything, but I won't get fired.
Right.
So we have, but in doing so, what I'm learning is, you know, there's not enough of us to go around.
Right.
You know, I've got 20 agents on my team. I could use five more tomorrow.
Right.
You know, just it's in this season, this time of year, as we're going into what's called open enrollment, annual enrollment for the Medicare people. It's just it is a very busy time for us.
So this is like the NFL season is your season.
It really is. It really is. Right. Just like CPAs in March and April. It's kind of where we are. It's just the low hanging fruit, and go get as much as you can, and just, you know, you don't have to go that hard, but don't. You know, when January gets here and things slow down, it's not as fast.
Right.
We can't complain because this is our opportunity.
My wife handles all the health insurance stuff for us, and you know, over the past several years, we've had, you know, we've been blessed with a pretty good deal mm-hmm. with our health, what we pay for health insurance. And I know for a lot of people, it hasn't been the case, especially when they're working for somebody else. They don't have the write-offs or anything like that to go along mm-hmm. with it. What are the biggest misperceptions you're coming across from people that are in just precarious, expensive situations?
You know, there's sweet spots in this thing based on a family, based on their ages, based on, you know, how many people are in the family. And a guy making 50 grand who's single isn't going to get near as good a deal as the guy who's got a wife and two kids making 50 grand.
Right.
Okay. Group insurance is a little bit hit and miss. We watched 30-something million Americans lose their benefits during the COVID thing. And so in doing so, the biggest reason for that was they didn't want to lay them off. They didn't want to let people go. So we've got to cut costs somewhere. So that's the first thing we did. Well, our phones blew up. You know, the year of COVID was very, very busy for us.
Right.
So that part makes our life, you know, it was just a scramble. So because what we're the biggest thing in that we're seeing is just folks are confused because they don't understand exactly what this does, especially if you've been on corporate American group insurance for most of your life. It is a different language to speak right. the individual market because it is all network driven,
right?
You know? And so, and because of what the government's done with it, they've required that every plan has to do certain things. It's called the 10 essentials. So every plan is going to pay for your annual exams. Every plan's going to have maternity coverage. So if you're single and 62-year-old male, if you get pregnant, we got you covered, okay? Just in case. Don't worry about that. And so, so these types of things are all included. So with that, a lot of stuff had to go. So when they put all these things in there, then something, the bells and whistles. And so the plans are very vanilla, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. And so we've got to figure out how to take that vanilla and put some nuts and cherries and chocolate and other stuff on it to make it taste better.
Right.
And sometimes that's just figuring out what's in the guy's budget and what's the best way to make it work for him.
You have a somewhat, not a cynical view on it, but a very realistic view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't really try and paint it into something that it's not. It is what it is.
Right.
And what you're selling is it's kind of, you kind of have to have it, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. You know, you do and you don't, I guess. The mandate's not there anymore, but
right.
it's good to have in place. I mean, at what point does it not make sense, though, you know, when it costs too much?
Yeah, and it's just usually with people, there are certain age brackets you get to or certain things, but they've expanded the subsidy amount. And it used to be, say, that couple who's 62 years old, taking early retirement, making $65,000 a year, they can get a plan for less than $300 a month.
Right.
But if they're making $70,000 a year, they're paying $1,400.
Yeah.
It went up $1,000 just because you made $5,000 more. Where's that incentive to go
make more money,
yeah, work harder, and be a better hand, so to speak, and be a better citizen? It's not there. And so now that's been raised on that federal poverty level from 400% to 600%. And so now we've gone from the mid-60s to about 110 for that husband mm-hmm. and wife. So now all of a sudden there's some, you know, a year ago, if we were having this conversation, I'd be saying, these guys are stuck. We have to go get them a product that is underwritten, because there's a couple of companies out there that when the government said, okay, here's the rule. Every plan has to do this. Every plan has to do this. A couple of companies just said, we're not going to play.
Yeah.
We're going to sit on the sidelines and watch and do our own thing. So they still underwrite their product. And in doing so, if someone makes too much money, it comes in a lot more affordable.
Right.
Why? Because we're going to check you out before we say yes. We're not just going to sign you up sight unseen. And so in doing that, that makes their ability to insure you much more affordable, because we've got a bucket of people here who are all healthy.
Right.
And so, and that would come in handy. Now, it was still not as affordable, but it was better than what the alternative was. And so we've just kind of, you know, figuring out what's the lesser of the two, what fits them the best. But with what's happened recently, with the recent change in the law, it's made it to where the marketplace stuff looks a lot more affordable, you know.
Right.
You know, there's pros and cons to both. One of them has a tremendous footprint and network across the country. One of them is very limited, you know, mm-hmm. as far as who you can go see and what you can and can't do. And so
now you are not doing work with the marketplace.
I do both.
Okay.
I do both, yeah. So my job's, like I said, beat you up with questions and figure out, are we better off putting you on the marketplace? Because if someone's self-employed and they know how to, you know, that tax return, they could make $150,000 a year, but that adjusted gross shows he makes $64,000.
Right.
Then that's good. We can take that and run with it and help him get to a better place, because it's going to be a lot more affordable.
But if you're a W-2, you're kind of locked
it's
in.
It's a little bit tough.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tough.
So a lot of people out there being W-2, they're kind of getting mm-hmm. just
because we're seeing both on the group side. We're seeing companies offer really good group plans that they put in front of me. I'm saying, dude, take that, go run. Or maybe it's great for him by himself, but if I put my wife and kids on there, it jumps $700. Yeah. To stay where you are, let me have them, you know, type of thing. And so then there's plans that are just companies are just offering it just to say, yes, we offer it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the folks that we've got to really kind of watch a little bit. And just make sure that we're getting them in a better place. So,
because it's more of it's a tax deduction for the business and a benefit for the employees. Right. But I mean, they're paying half the bill typically. And that's where the markup is. There's a lot of expense.
And I'll get small business owners who need that tax write off, you know, and that maybe they got five or six employees and they're asking me, should I do group or should I do individual? I said, let's run the numbers both ways. And the advantage is the tax write-off on the group side. But if these guys are making $30,000 to $40,000 a year, you're almost doing them an injustice putting them on group insurance.
Right.
Because the individual marketplace stuff that the government's put in place is just so much more affordable. And we can load it up with a lot more bells and whistles.
And because the business is offering them insurance, can they get on the marketplace as an individual?
Right.
Is that a part of it?
The way the rules read is if you're offered it through your job, you have to take it unless it uses a certain amount of your income.
Right.
So what we would see people do is, you know, maybe, and the number is about 8.5-9%. So if I'm making $2,000 a month, I shouldn't have to be paying more than $160 for my insurance.
Right.
Somewhere to it. So all of a sudden that insurance is going to run him $150. That's not bad. But if I put my wife on there, it goes to $400. Well, we've just changed the rules because we want to stay together on a plan so I can move them. Okay.
At that point, they don't have to take the company.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't know the threshold was there. I always thought that if it was company offered, you had to take it.
No, I mean, and honestly, you could, if someone didn't want to take what the company offered and it was a good price, they could still go with me, but they're not eligible for any subsidy help unless that number is above, you know, that threshold number.
Now, getting back to, you know, you talked about doing what you did in Texas, in West Texas.
Yes, Lubbock.
And
all my exes live in Texas.
Okay. You have a lot of, you know, experience with the trades. You were in that world being a distributor and just visiting, you know, all sorts of different places, bringing donuts and coffee, like you said, before we got started here. I mean, how did you retire from that and then move to Tennessee? How did that transition happen?
So I grew up in Lubbock, and my father owned a wholesale house.
Right.
We had, you know, when I got out of college, we had three stores. This was about mid to late 80s. Yeah. And then about 7-8 years later, we had 10 stores. I had about 300 employees. We covered all of West Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma.
That was a family business?
Family business.
Oh, okay.
My dad owned it. My brother and I were in the business with him. And wholesale plumbing, we were distributors for some of the big name companies and stuff like this, and just had a lot of fun with it. But, you know, we were calling on home builders, we're calling on plumbers and electricians and heating and air conditioning guys and apartment houses and everything under the sun that needed what we have. And so so that was a great, you know, I jokingly said everyone loved Christmas holidays. That weren't as fun for us because the day after Christmas, my friend's out on a skateboard. I'm in the warehouse counting PVC and copper, you know, type of thing. And so it was inventory time, you know. Yeah. But we had a lot of fun doing it. And so my dad hit retirement age. And it got to the point in that industry, you know, it's funny because if you go back to 1990, the DIYs is what we call them, the do-it-yourself stores, the Home Depots, the Builder Squares, and you know, Payless Cashways, Handy Dan's back during the day, you know, some of these places. They were getting about, 1991, they were getting about 10% of the plumbing business in America.
Oh, wow.
In 1993, they were getting half of it.
Oh, wow,
Two years it went that quickly. So, I mean, because what would normally happen is a guy who buys a lot of heating and air conditioning gets a better price from me than the guy who's going to buy one a year.
Yeah.
Okay. But now both of you can walk into a big box place and pay the same price. And so we would have to, and so it changed how we went to business. So the only way to stay competitive in this industry is to keep growing or to sell.
Yeah.
Okay. And so dad called my brother and I and said, what do y'all want to do? And it's just, we watched him get on a plane on Sunday mornings or Monday mornings, come home on Friday. But he and mom were empty nesters at the time. I had four kids. My brother had three. We're like, sell it.
Yeah.
And so we just, there's days I miss it. It was a lot of fun. I actually talked to my brother yesterday about some other stuff, and we started reminiscing about people who used to work for us and laughing about this guy who used to hide in the warehouse and scare you every time you came through there, you know. And so we had to start carrying a cup of water so we could throw it out of him, so we quit. But so we sold out to Ferguson and went into corporate America. And then my wife and I moved to Dallas for about 8 years, and I kept doing what I was doing, just on a bigger scale. in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for about 8 years.
In the health insurance industry?
No, still the wholesale business. So okay. Ferguson's the big dog. We went from a company with 10 stores, 300 employees, to a company with 5,000 locations. And I mean 300 locations, 5,000 employees across the country. So it just got in there. Now they're publicly owned and everything like this.
So you were doing business development, sales, territory management
I ran the home builder division for Ferguson for about 8 years and oversaw about 6 or 7 showrooms and about half a dozen outside salespeople and stuff like this. And, Dallas, Fort Worth area had 60,000 housing starts in 2006. In 2007, they had 29,000.
Oh, wow.
Bottom fell out of the market. We all became numbers overnight and got walking papers.
Yeah.
That type of thing. And that eventually led us to Tennessee. So
interesting, because you got a lot of people moving to Texas now from California and some even from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
We had our eyes on Texas for a while when we lived in Nevada.
Yeah.
It's
a good, it's a wonderful place. Yeah. We loved our time there. And it's just, not that we won't be back one day, but we really like where we've landed.
Yeah. It's a nice place. And you landed, I would assume, right at the right time. 08, 09. It was a good, great time to buy a house.
Yeah, it was. Well, ironically, is what was hitting the economy in 2007 in Dallas followed us over here. 2006 followed us over, and it hit about a year later. But Nashville's very diversified.
Yeah.
And so even though their housing industry got hit the way ours did, it didn't impact the economy near as bad.
Yeah, there were certain places that were just really insulated.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas not being one of them, South Florida not being one of them. Our house, we bought a house in 02 in Vegas. I want to say we paid 1.5 for it. Mm-hmm. We sold it in 05 when we moved here for double, so just shy of 3. Yep. And, it took us, we're just past the pinnacle of what was going on at that particular point, because, like here, you would put a house on the market, you'd have, 5-10 offers instantly.
Mm-hmm.
So it took us about 3 months to sell at the time. And we finally made it happen, got the funds and everything, and ended up doing a lot better than we thought we would. And then we checked on the house, I want to say 4 years later, it was like $80,000.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, just completely way under what we paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we left at the right time. One of those over-inflated.
My dad used to always say, the good Lord takes care of babies and idiots,
I must be the idiot.
That about covers all of us at some point.
Yeah, I mean, because I was certainly idiotic most of my life, but I'm not sure if I've ever really gotten my stuff together yet. So getting to Tennessee, you walk in, you're on a Cobra plan, like you said, I got to find some better options for us. And how did the
guy across the table just said, so what are you doing, Tom? And I told him I was with a consulting group and doing some stuff. He said, I think you'd really be good at this.
Yeah.
I said, I want you to meet somebody. And so then I came back the day later for another interview, did the presentation I was in. I mean, to get the guy who was my boss, a dear friend of mine, who we lost him in a car accident about a year and a half ago.
I'm sorry.
About 6 weeks younger than I am, and just give you the shirt off his back, but just said all the right things in the presentation. I just thought, okay, I can work for this guy.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing, is just he's positive. He brings a lot of energy. He's like, you realize he's one of those guys who's got your back and he's not going to let you down. The closest thing to my dad I'd seen, just in a version that was 40 years younger,
And this was 08, 09, around that
2000,
era?
October of 08.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. So right as everything August was just September. Melting down.
Right, yeah.
So you go into this, you're in a new area, you bought a new house.
Yeah.
Everything starts falling apart and you're in a brand new industry you got to learn and everything. I mean, was it kind of tumultuous in a way, or
the thing that got me, it is, if you'd have told me I was going to do this, I'd have never believed you.
Yeah.
But the thing that hooked me was I knew what my situation was, and I'd been in corporate America, I'd been in family business, and now I'm getting ready to be self-employed.
Yeah,
all of them have pluses and minuses.
Oh, of course,
goods and bads to them.
It's always
the biggest thing was on this one was you have a chance to, the sky's the limit on how much you can make. And I had just come out of a deal where I had 50 something people underneath me. And all but two of them had made more than I did the year before.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're on commission versus salary. And so if the company had a great year, then I would get some bonuses. But my division was killing it out in Dallas, but the other divisions weren't. And so I was just on my base salary. And so I just, he just said, I like to, his comment was, I like to get checks every week with commas in them.
Yeah.
I said, I like the way you're talking. It didn't happen.
Just one comma.
Right. Yeah. And it didn't happen overnight, but it was not a get-rich-quick scheme, but it was an industry that I look back and I think back to all my buddies in college who went into this industry and blew my phone up at 23, 24, 25 years old. And I'm like, leave me alone, go away, you know, type of stuff. And now they're in a nice situation in their late 40s, early 50s, because they stuck with it and toughed it out and did what they got to do. And you know, the machine runs itself after a period of time. You really do. There's a point where you're climbing on this thing, and it just takes a while to get there. But once it gets there, then you're on the downhill, and you're just trying to manage. You
know? So I would imagine it's getting the flywheel going.
Right.
5 years?
For me, it was probably 7 or 8.
Really?
But for the new agents, with everything that we have, all the tools we have, the technology, you can get there in four to five.
Yeah, because, I mean, you had to go through the muck that was Obamacare and everything, and working with those perceptions and things of that nature.
When I started with the company, we had two products we sold, a bad one and a worse one. And I sold a ton of them. And what I learned in that is that people are clueless. They don't understand this. They trust the guy across the desk from them. And then all of a sudden, we had the opportunity to buy some to become better producers and manufacturers of products that really, really do help folks. And it changed us. And so the positive for the new agent is you've got a portfolio of stuff that I didn't begin to start with. Mm-hmm. The negative is you got a portfolio of stuff that I didn't have to, because you just have to learn so much more, so much faster.
Yeah.
But it's very rarely do I walk in someone's house or sit on a meeting with them that I don't have something in my pipeline that's going to help you and put you in a better place than you.
Do you have a lot more options now than you did?
Tons.
Yeah.
Because we do health, we do individual, we do small groups, we do supplemental, we do life, we do Medicare. It's just, you know, like my seat in the chapter is a health and Medicare chapter. But that Medicare world is going to be interesting to watch, because number one, you got 11,000 people a day turning 65.
Yeah.
The baby boomers are hitting prime time here. And if you follow their trends from the time they started, PlaySchool and Mattel had their best years. As did Pampers and Gerber and everybody like that. It goes up to when they get to be younger kids, the Schwinn bicycle rates took off.
Right.
You know, all the price. Then the Ford Mustang and the Chevy Corvette. That was their takeoff years, was when all that group's turning 16, 17 years old. Then the housing industry in the early 80s. And now they're all turning 65. You know, so it's just, there's just a trend that just follows them. If, you know, a bit of trivia, all these hotels, the big places like the Marriott Courtyard, the Hampton Inns, the stuff like this, those one or two night stays, they all have it in their bylaws to convert that thing to a long-term care facility one day, or assisted living if they need to.
And that's right. You talked about that.
If you think about it, they all have ADA compatible bathtubs, kitchens, mini kitchens, and all they have to do is gut that bottom floor and make it into a nurse's station. In 30 days, this thing's something else.
Yeah,
it's genius when you think about it.
But it really is.
They've done a good job with it. So, but that group is hitting prime time now, and one of the things that's in this stuff that the government's trying to pass on this gazillion-dollar thing that's going through the White House right now is it could move Medicare age from 65 to 60, which could change a whole look of what I do.
Right. Now,
we're just kind of waiting to
for
see.
For good or bad? You have no idea.
It depends on who you ask. You know, I mean, there's part of me that feels like it's going to dilute a system that's pretty good already.
Right.
But the hardest people for us to write policies on, as I said, is that 60 to 65-year-old. You know, is to stay really comfortable and affordable, you know, is to get them in there. So it's I think it's a coin flip, honestly.
So basically, the insurance companies are like the middleman, because, I mean, we have a lot of catastrophic plans in place for us to lower our front end. And, you know, if anything, God forbid, happens, we just negotiate and pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
You know, is that something you see a lot of people doing?
A lot of folks doing. As long as I got a stop in place, as long as I have a maximum out of pocket, I know that if something horrible happens, once I get to $7,000, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, that's really changed the mindset. It's interesting because people expect so much more. I mean, if every homeowner's policy you bought paid for someone to come fix your air conditioning and your water heater twice,
it'd be through the roof. No pun intended.
If every auto policy paid to get your oil changed and your wheels rotated three times a year, it'd be a lot more expensive. But that's exactly what we expect on the health plans.
Yeah,
we want it to do all this stuff, and so they're just kind of backing away and
with a $20 copay,
right? Yeah. With all that stuff. So now we're trying to put them in there to say it will pay for your annuals, but then rather than spend a bunch of money just to buy a deductible down, let's put some things in there to cover the big ticket items. Something that will pay you $50,000 if they find cancer in your wife. Something to cover that emergency room visit. Something that if I get hurt, can't go to work for 6 months, I got money coming in for a while.
Okay? Right.
That's a better way to spend your dollars rather than paying an extra $200 or $300 just to get a deductible lower. Because when you go to the hospital, I don't care if your deductible is $2,000 or $6,000, you're going to hit it tonight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So rather than pay that money to buy it down, let's spend it on something that'll put money back in your pocket. So,
well, with that being said,
hey.
No, that's not what I wanted. Here we go.
What?
I love when I hit the wrong button. Tom, what's your problem, man?
Is that what's your problem, or is that Wheel of Fortune?
It's Wheel of Fortune theme with What's Your Problem?
Gotcha.
Which a bunch of people in the building here sang.
Gotcha.
I recorded it and overdubbed it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, radio. From back in the day.
Plagiarism is the biggest form of flattery.
In a way. Yeah. Until the producers from whatever network owns Wheel of Fortune and all this, you know, ask for forgiveness.
I'm with you. So you're asking me?
I'm asking you, what's the thing keeping you up at night?
Keeping up with it. Yeah. I literally the open enrollment, I've been pushing people off. And November 1st, I just said, call me after the first of November, then I'll have the numbers and we can look at stuff. By 3 o'clock, I had 17 voicemails and 41 emails.
Right.
Of just people saying, can we talk today?
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
get on the queue.
Just get on and go and just see how many we can handle. And so, and again, it's just not having the manpower to take care of every single person because we're not going to be able to.
You know? So is it more support staff that you need?
Support staff would be, you know, obviously people are just figuring out a better way to oil this thing to where the machine runs a little bit smoother and efficient without having to touch so many things, so many people, you know, so many times. And just, but we've learned, you know, just in different things that sometimes if I don't go through and touch them all every year, that 6 months from now, my name's not on there anymore.
Right.
Somewhere in the process, I'm not the agent that they need.
But the agent, well, you have guys working under you, going out and getting business and
doing
selling.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Right. They all have their own team. They all have their own game plan to go. And so, and it's a wonderful industry. We're going to stay busy. And this time of year is just, you know, how go take care of as many as you can. You
right.
know? But the biggest issue is number one, just having a few more guys. Number two, just being able to get to everybody who's coming down the pipeline. You know,
and instead of being able to take care of them, back right. office issues.
Right.
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 How is it that your previous careers helped you in preparing for this? I mean, selling a business, I would imagine, especially of the magnitude you're talking about, probably gave you a little bit of a financial cushion going into the next set of business. Hey, you know, I've got the financial. There's urgency and hustle, but it's not because I need to make a living. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Was that the scenario for
right for the you know the best thing I had going for me working for my dad was if as soon as I acted like the boss's son I lost my job
right
and so we were the ones who got to take the phone call on a Sunday afternoon or 3 o'clock in the morning when a guy had something broken and needed someone to go let him in and I had to get up put my clothes on drive across town open the warehouse and get him a water heater or compressor or whatever the case was and so we were the ones who stayed late went early and stuff like this so my work ethic was there.
Yeah,
and that was the part.
The buck stops with you guys.
That I was thankful for, and that's the biggest thing is we don't blame anybody. We don't point fingers. We don't, you know. You mentioned Lauren the other day, and you know, just what I've been raised on, and the religious side of me says we don't, you know. Everybody has their own life that they're responsible for.
Yeah,
if something's not going right, the first thing I'm supposed to do is look inward. You know, what can I do better? Who can I be better? How can I change who I am to make this thing work? And if I can do it better, and I can imply that to everybody who's on my team, and they learn how to do that as well, it's just so much more smoother and peaceful. Because you're gonna have trials. We're gonna have stuff we go through. We're gonna have tests that we get hit with. The question is, you know, are we gonna point fingers and blame someone, or are we gonna say, okay, what am I supposed to learn from this?
You know? Well, it's the only thing you have control over is how you react.
Right.
And how you adapt to the situation,
right?
You know, but I mean that's kind of the reality of life in any given situation. Mm-hmm. You know, you got so many people that just they're pointing octopus, and it's I tend to think that I'm one of those people that just okay, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
How could I be better at this? You know, let me look in the mirror first. What did I say that might have tipped somebody off or pissed them off or whatever?
Exactly.
You know, so I mean, kind of it's good wisdom to go by.
Yeah.
You know,
and just making sure that I'm the one who can go be successful. I'm the one who can fail. You know,
right.
It's not always about the dollars. It's about it's about the sense.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I heard a guy say it the other day. I was watching one of the sports stations. I think it was Game Day on ESPN or something. They were interviewing one of the coaches, the guy from Michigan State, and they were going to play Michigan. And they asked the coach, they said, he said, are you guys ready for this type of a stage?
Yeah.
He said, no, we're not ready. He said, we're prepared.
Yeah.
And that's two different mindsets.
Yeah.
You know, everybody on my team is ready for open enrollment. We can't wait for the phones to start ringing. But are you prepared to handle when this guy asks you a question that throws you a curveball? Are you prepared to get this guy and settle him down and make sure that he understands what we're doing so that he's becomes a resource for you and refers you to other people. Yeah. Are you prepared to handle all the stuff that's coming at you? That's the stuff you can't teach until we get there, and then we have to kind of be hands-on with them a little bit.
That takes a little bit of sales moxie.
It does.
Life experience. You know,
I think back a lot. I've got a son. I've got a son-in-law. I've got a daughter working for me right now. And yeah. I think back to, I hear my dad coming out of me. You know,
yeah.
And I just, you know, and it's just, but it was
not the truth.
And it's not so much of just what I'm saying as much of just understanding why he was so cool under pressure, because he'd been doing it for 20 years.
Well, not only that,
it's just, and that's that. And so that's coming back out of me. Just,
yeah.
You know, if I can get them to where I am 10, 15 years faster, their life's going to be so much better. You know,
and the funny thing is that somebody had made, I don't remember who it was, but they said, you know, I just don't want them to make the same mistakes I did. It's understandable, but dude, you got to understand that they're going to make mistakes.
There's a learning curve.
Yeah.
Because I mean, some people have to.
There's being told about a mistake. It's you know, those who don't study up on history tend to repeat it, that whole notion. Mm-hmm. I feel like you can study history as much as you. We're going through a time right now that we can look back on history and say, hey, this happened before, but why are we still going through this? Why mm-hmm. does it seem eerily similar to what they went through 80 years ago? Mm-hmm. It's because we didn't feel it. We have no idea what that felt like. There's no intrinsic, we don't feel it in the fiber of our beings. Mm-hmm. What our great-grandparents went through,
yeah.
you know, back in the 40s and stuff like that. And I think that's the similar. I mean, some things you just have to experience. Mm-hmm. And you feel it and you go, okay, I remember what that felt like.
Yeah.
Hey, don't go into credit card debt and don't, you know, not pay your bill, because you're going to have 5 to 7 years of bad credit and that's not fun. Well, hey, guess what? I mm-hmm. went through that and I know what that feels like.
Yep.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
But if I tell that to my kids, they have no idea.
Right.
They don't listen to me anyway. So they're just of that age where they know everything, you know. Did you find with your kids that turned at some point? Give me some hope here as a parent.
It's amazing how smart my parents were. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. You know, and ours are pretty much all graduating out of school now, but it, to the point to where, you know, getting married does it for you. Having yeah. babies does it for you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, but, you know, it just.
Dang it, they were right.
You train up a child in the way he should go, and at the end he won't depart from it. That's the prayer,
yeah.
you know, and that they get it and they understand it, that we've pointed them in the right direction, that we've put enough truth and stuff in there. This is a good answer. That's a bad answer, you know, and that it will help you. You know?
I just always felt if I felt like I was a horrible parent and I'm doing it awfully and I'm really messing up my child, I'm probably doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know where you're going with that. I know where you're going with that. There's a part of that that's a mouthful of truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you feel like you're a great parent, then beware. You're probably mm-hmm. doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. I feel like an awful parent all mm-hmm. the time. Yeah, and that's the funny thing is that I was telling my son yesterday. He's going through some things in school, and I said, listen, you're not going to hear anything that I'm saying or any wisdom right now for whatever reason, because you're 13, and who am I to tell you, mm-hmm. all right? I said, but eventually, probably in your 20s, you're going to say, you know what? He was right, and mm-hmm. it'll always be in the back of your mind. I said, because I was there too.
Yeah.
My father told me a lot of things I should do that I didn't do.
Mm-hmm. And so, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, to meet my maker, he's not going to ask me how much money I made. He's not going to ask what kind of car I drove or where I lived, but...
Right.
He is going to say, what'd you do with that wife and those four kids I gave you?
Right.
You know, did you point in the right direction? Did you show them how this is done? Did you teach them what being honest and truthful looks like? You know,
because when you're a kid, you don't realize that your parent, you know, everything you're going through, like your first kid, mm-hmm. our first, you know, she's 14 years old. We know what to expect with a 15-year-old daughter. Well, we do and we don't, you know, because as parents, we're going through it the first time. Just like she's going through and experiencing different things the first time for her mm-hmm. life. For us, it's the first time.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I guess it becomes easier for the second and third child in our case, right? But it's always the first time to go through these things.
Right.
You know, all of us are going through something the very first time, even though we may have some sort of experience as that person on the other side,
yeah.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly it. And just having some wisdom and some guidance and surrounding yourself with folks who, you know, we're like-minded and have the same objective for their kids as you have for yours.
You
know,
you try and do the best you can. You know? I mean, that's my, whenever our kids complain about stuff, it's like, you guys, you got to remember, we're doing the best we can here. Mm-hmm. Right? We're trying as hard as we can.
We're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
We're not perfect.
Exactly.
You know? But we can say, I'm sorry.
I mean, there was a metaphor, actually, it was a metaphorical story that somebody had told about a fence. And every time this person got mad, you hammered a nail into the fence. But it's like yelling at your kid or getting upset with them. You're always hammering that nail in the fence. You go back and apologize, which means pulling the nail back out of the fence. But guess what's left is a hole. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always, but it's a fence without holes is it's how character is built. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to figure out who you are with those types of adversities.
Good example. Yeah. Good example.
Well, what kind of people are you looking for to build your team?
Well, for teams, I'm looking for the guys who are, you know, there's a lot of good folks who are coming out of corporate America and just thought, you know, anytime our economy goes through something like it's going through right now, the entrepreneurial spirit comes out of people.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. In Middle Tennessee, we are in such a bubble. We've got such a plethora of folks who do good with something like this. But, you know, I jokingly tell people that the greatest thing about my job is I get to make my own schedule every day.
Yeah.
The worst thing about my job is I get to make my own schedule every day.
Yeah.
You know, and you look up and it's 4 o'clock and nothing productive's happened. It's not no one's fault but mine. And everyone thinks they want to be self-employed, you know, until
I think they're their own boss.
They do that. And so we have to kind of remind them every once in a while that if you had a room full of 10 people just like you, what direction is the company going?
Right.
You know, are we getting better? We're getting worse. And so that's, and so that therein lies the responsibility that comes with it. But the folks who, who love having conversations, who love talking to people, we can help you learn something, but you just got to understand that the process to get there doesn't happen as fast as you think it does. You know, and because one thing we've learned a lot with that independent personality is I want my results and I want them right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. It doesn't happen that fast. But if it's done correctly, it can be very, you know, satisfying when it's all said and done.
When I was in the car business, it was Rome could be built in a week.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a really good month and make a really good paycheck. Mm-hmm. But typically in those phenomenons, the person doing that, it might have been their first or second month. Then all of a sudden they get cocky and they start knowing everything. And then their sales go down because they figured it all out. They didn't stay stupid.
Goes back to what you're talking about with sometimes our kids have to go through stuff because I'll have agents who will have a big month. And then they'll think, oh, I got enough money to hold me for a while. And then they'll disappear.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden they're back in here. And you got to keep that wheel oiled, whether you're going hard or going soft. You got to always be doing something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like you're starting from scratch all over again.
Yeah.
You know? And once you go through that a couple of times, you figure out, well, that didn't work, you know. So we've got to do this a different way.
Do you kind of hit when you have people that are interested in doing what you're doing? Do you hit them with the realities right out of the
real quick? I said it's not a get rich quick scheme. People ask me all the time, can I make X amount of dollars my first year? I'm like, no. But if we start on month 4 and go to month 16, then yeah, you can. But those first 3 months, we're throwing a lot at you. There's a learning curve. You're drinking from a fire hose. You know, we got to get you ready.
And, you know, understanding how to work with people, networking, how to, you know, you get a lot of people. What kind of types of people do you want to attract?
What's crazy
in the service industry?
The guy who trained me
will
sit at his desk and make 300, 400 phone calls a day.
That's crazy.
That's not my style. Yeah. But you know what? He's a rock star at it. And he's one of the best in the country at what he does. And I'd rather be out shaking hands and kissing babies and doing after hours events and trade shows and whatever else to get in front of folks, because most of the people who are coming through that stuff are wired the same way I am.
Right.
They appreciate what I bring to the table, you know, and how I'm getting them set up to be taken care of.
He's got more of a transactional approach while you have more of a relational.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And with that, because of that, I'm in my, what was that, 2008? So my 13th year doing this.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't taken really a company lead in about 3 years.
Yeah,
90% of my business is referrals.
Yeah,
you know, we talk about our B&I chapter. It's responsible for 30% of the money I make every year comes out of that room.
Right.
You know, and even last month I wrote a policy on a lady who was referred to me by someone who hasn't been in that chapter for 5 years, but she's still sending my name out to people.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it hits me. There's not enough of us out there. Why is she referring me? We hadn't seen each other, and it just there's just not as big a population that's needed for what I do.
Well, it's making also making sure people know that you're whenever they think of the category you're in, that your name comes up.
Right.
You know, and that's a big part of marketing and branding is making sure that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that someone's when they're thinking of health insurance, your name comes up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A couple of guys in other chapters that I worked with, that did the same kind of, you know, sold health insurance. We did entertain them and brought them in and you know, listened. And it was one of those things. It just wasn't a fit. So the perception is there that it may not be a fit always, but it's one of those things we got to get around and figure out how to, you know, get back in front of each other, so to speak.
Right. And there's consistency. And so it's been, so that part's been good. And so I never saw myself doing it, but it's been truly blessed. And, and every year's better than the last one. I'm getting to, you know, just help people, whether it's through my, you know, my workplace, whether it's coworkers, whether it's, you know, church friends or whatever the case is, and just being able to be a, you know, someone who can clear that smoke up and help them understand exactly how this works and what is this I'm looking at, because it's a foreign language if you don't know what you're doing.
What you're doing a lot different from what you did back with your family business? And
I was in sales, and it was, you know, to a degree, and not really. I mean, I'm not so much selling bells and whistles on what this does, as much as I'm asking questions, saying what do you need, you know, and then trying to take what he just told me. And if I do it right, then one of my old agents calls it being a masker, tasker, question asker. You know, and if you ask the right questions, then they'll give you enough information. So that said, okay, here's what I recommend we do. And when we put that in there, this is going to take care of this because you told me that. This will take care of this. This will, and then they're like, okay.
Well, you hit the sales process nail on the head right there, asking the questions. The person who asks the questions is the one who drives the conversation.
Just let them do it.
So. There's a lot of people, though, and, you know, some of the people you're recruiting, I would imagine, probably in their 20s, people in around that age. We have a guy here who we're coaching and coaching up into being probably a rock star salesperson. But we tell him realistically, I said, you got, you know, a good 5 to 7 year running for you. And for you, that seems like a lifetime. But man, when you're 30 years old and you look back on it, it's going to seem like it went like that.
You know, and I jokingly say, I wish I'd started this when I was 25. I wouldn't have been near this good. Yeah. I wouldn't have been near successful. To answer your question, I'm doing well at this because there's so much that I didn't have to be taught.
Right.
Because I knew the habits of getting up and going. I knew the more times you bait that hook, the more fish you're going to catch. It's just a numbers thing, and you got to get out and you got to go see them. And so I was so used to entertaining clients and doing a lot of things. And so because of those habits, this came a lot easier to me than it did to some other people.
And that's the truth in general. With life experience comes just a ton of benefit, you know. Mm-hmm. Just even handling conversations with our guy here. He's 23 years old, and he's just trying to figure out how to have conversations with people, you know. And, well, I got to tell him some bad news. I said, well, then you come out and you tell them. You rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're teaching them about how not to supplicate, how not to, you got to defer to their authority to a certain extent, but you also have to be the expert. If they hit you with something you don't know, you know what? That's a good question.
Let me find out for you.
I've never actually thought about that.
Yeah, right. That's the last thing you want to do is guess.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Because they'll know.
Yeah.
They'll know.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, we went years ago on a trip to... It's always stood out to me, and I always use this story when I talk to my agents and train them. But we were distributors for General Electric appliances.
Yeah.
You know, and GE appliances, the appliance part of the GE is like 4 or 5% of what they actually do as a company, but it's 70% of their name recognition.
Yeah.
If I say, what does GE do? That's one of the first things you're going to think of. They do plane engines. They do lighting. They do all kinds of
other ovens, microwaves.
Stuff, all this stuff. Yeah. So all this other stuff that makes a big difference. So, but in the kitchen side of it, they have a 1-800 GE Cares. And we were at my mom and dad's Thanksgiving years ago, and her oven goes out that morning at 9 o'clock.
Ugh.
We called the number, and by 1 o'clock, we had a new oven.
Really?
Installed in there. But when we went through the factory, it was up in Louisville, Kentucky. We went through the factory and walked through, and it's cubicles about the size of this. There's probably 4 people in this room right here.
Yeah.
And the guy's sitting there facing a wall in a coat and tie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the phone all day long. But it's just, and that whole presentation of how he talks on the phone is inspired by how he looks and how he feels about himself.
That's his armor.
Exactly. And so if he was in, you know, cutoffs and a baseball cap and, you know, hadn't shaved this morning, it's a whole different voice coming across that phone.
Yeah.
As I promise you, if you're leaned back with your feet up on your desk when you're talking to these folks, they can tell.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the energy you bring through the phone. I will have my people leave a voicemail. You know, I set up their voicemail, said, now let's play it back. And I let them listen to themselves. And I say, would you call this guy back?
Yeah.
Okay. you got to make them want to call you.
Signaling 101.
Yeah, just all those types of things that we have to, that we take for granted because I'm seasoned. I've been doing this long enough. It's not something I have to think about anymore. But these 23, 25-year-olds need a little more hand-holding than that. It just, and once they learn it, they got it.
And it's not their fault. It's just a matter of it's life experience, you know. That was what really helped me in the car business when I got started because, I mean, I knew I had to make a connection with people. Mm-hmm. And I started at a Honda dealership. When I got a customer on a Honda Odyssey, all day long because that's my backyard.
You know, that's a hard gig. And I've had two or three guys on my team who've been car salesmen. I said, if you can do that, you can do anything. You know? I mean, because usually, I mean, you know this, if I'm out looking at cars and some young kid comes out and says, y'all, any questions I can answer? Everyone's like this all of a sudden.
Yeah, the wall's up.
Yeah, and it's just, and so we've got to get that down in asking the questions and letting the client understand that you're in charge more than you think you are.
Well, again, it's a journey of, just providing information, answering questions, and just figuring out if this is the right match because we definitely had the guys that would try and force people into a car, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to sleep at night, you know. Right. So going from a Honda dealership where it was grind, I went to a Mercedes dealership where there was more relational relationships happening because that's how you built your business, you know.
You know, and the things, I guess, you know, and just the honesty side for us is there's a lot of insurance folks out there that don't have a good reputation, and we don't want to be one of those people, you know.
Yeah.
I don't ever want that going off people thinking they can get away with it, you know, if you're on my team. It's just, you know, look them in the eyes, shoot them the truth. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I've had to go back and eat crow because it didn't do what I thought the plan was going to do, and we've had to make things right with them and help them figure something out. And,
yeah.
That's always fun, but when you do it right, like you said, you can sleep a lot better.
Yep.
You know, it's just, and that's the biggest part of it is understanding that, you know, they're as human as I am. They put the pants on one leg at a time, but I'm not perfect at this. You know, we're going to make mistakes, but if we can develop the trust, then, you know, it will run itself because it's, you know, you could get very wealthy very quick in this industry.
Yeah.
Pulling the wool over people's eyes, you know, and just, and forcing it. And it's, you know, I've watched enough people try that, and it didn't work for them. It's not worth it, you know.
It's a marathon not worth running.
Exactly.
Because you're constantly having to feed your funnel.
Right.
Instead of it feeding itself.
And just trusting the system. You know, my boss kept saying, do this. And there was days when there's a lot of ways to cook ramen noodles. I can tell you. I went through some years of it and you talked about it. I grew up, you know, not with a silver spoon, but with a lot, you know, in growing up and when we sold the company and so forth. But when I came and tried this and we moved to Tennessee, not for a job or anything, we came out here to be part of a church family. And so when we came, I didn't have a job. And so I took my 401k and we lived off of it while I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grow up, you know. And so in that process, pretty much drained everything I'd saved. And today I'm in a better place than I was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see that coming at all. You know,
but 20 years ago, that's painful.
Yeah. And doing it. And so we've worked our way through this thing and it's, you know, it's been blessed and it's just helping folks understand and just taking care of people, you know, and that's our niche.
So you're on the lookout for new team members and new sales team members as well.
Right.
Correct.
It's a mail because.
Where can people hit you up and reach you and reach out and all that good stuff?
You can go to, obviously, our website is healthmarkets.com and then /TomLaw, TOMLAW.
There you go.
They can go to my Facebook page and find us, or they can, you know, obviously, through the cell, call and text, whatever, that type of thing.
And, of course, we'll have all the information for that, the contact and how to get in touch with Tom in the description of the podcast. Tom, thanks for coming out and being a part of this. I really do appreciate it. It's been long overdue. We've been trying to make it happen for several months now. And now we'll just give you the tour of the building. And I'm going to ask you one question here, and I've been trying to be mindful of it. Out of all the different relics, we take a picture with one of them. I'm going to guess which one you're going to go with.
In here?
Yeah, I'm gonna say you're a Caps shield guy behind me, the big old. I could be wrong because you're not looking at the shield; you're looking at the axe.
Yeah, I'd seen that one the whole time we were talking.
Yeah,
I don't know. This is pretty cool.
Oh, the iron gauntlet.
That's
there
pretty
you go.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
You have all six stones to bring the powers of health insurance to your doorstep.
There you go. There you go. It works perfect.
You like that? Thanks again for coming out, brother. I really do appreciate it. And go check him out. healthmarkets.com/TomLaw.